before or not, and it has it just the question just came to mind when you were talking about LEDs. It's actually with an LCD type of device. Maybe explain to me or give me some insight into what I'm observing. I have an LCD watch that, if you hold it regular room light, you don't see any kind of flickering whatsoever. But if you hold it in sunlight, you could actually notice something like flickering, like it's almost beating against some sort of, you know, the light switch that's coming into the sun. I'm not sure what's going on, or actually what I'm actually seeing. Like, you ever observe something like that?
And many of these watches really are using a liquid crystal display. And the first question we all ask ourselves is, what makes the dark and clear sections of the liquid crystal display? And in many cases, it is a polarizer effect. In other words, there's a piece of Polaroid material, and depending on what voltage you put into the liquid crystal material, it's a kind of a fluid, it either co-polarizes or anti-polarizes. So it's very similar to taking a pair of sheets of Polaroid material and rotating one at 90 degrees versus the other. And you can go from dark to light. So one of the things that I found out with one of my calculators, for instance, is that I had a beautiful display on the screen, and I wanted to make a Xerox copy of what was on the screen of my handheld calculator. And the way the way the Xerox machine behaved, it wouldn't show anything except a blank screen. When you're outdoors, it's hard to believe that if you used a Polaroid lens on your camera while you're taking a color picture, and you look at the sky where the sun is over your left shoulder, and you're looking at the blue sky in front of you, so you're looking at the sky at a right angle, so to speak, it is highly polarized. The light coming off the sky is highly polarized. You rotate that lens, and you can make the blue sky turn very dark compared to the white clouds, and it makes a huge contrast increase if you're taking a cloud photograph. So the polarization of the sky when you're outdoors, combined with a particular look angle on your watch, I think it was, possibly can explain what you were seeing. Whereas the indoor lighting is not polarized, the outdoor lighting is partially polarized. And if you held that watch in front of you and rotate your body 360 degrees by, you know, using your feet, I wonder if you would continue to see the effect that you saw, Joe. From HRYY, KTRIW on the TechNet.
Well, I just tried that in as you were talking with room light, complex fluorescent source lights. No, doesn't make any difference. So I'll have to definitely try that outside. I thought it had something to do with possibly where maybe the power source, the current source that's actually running the LCD display, is not a continuous source, but actually something that's pulsed on and off extremely fast. I thought maybe that had something to possibly do with it, for, you know, the sake of maybe keeping the battery, the current, a little lower by actually pulsating the thing on off, you know, at a very, very fast rate.
Now, to repeat what I think you told me, indoors you do not see flicker, outdoors you do see flicker. And when you saw the flicker outdoors, does the whole display, everything that's lit up, so to speak, flicker? And I guess you haven't had the chance yet of rotating your body while looking at that watch outdoors to see if the flicker changes as a function of your angle to the sky, if you know what I mean. Or also try tilting the watch in various angles, left and right, forward and back, you know, tilt it in your pitch and roll, so to speak, compared to your eye. So once again, I think you said no flicker indoors, but you do see flicker outdoors. Is it the whole screen that flickers? And make a rough guess. What was the flicker rate that you think you saw, Joe? Go ahead.
I think all the segments on the watch, the displays, you know, the hour, minute, seconds, day, and date, as far as numeric, you know, display, I think everything on the watch was actually flickering. And I would say it looked like something about maybe 15 hertz. Possibly 15, 20 hertz, something where I could visually see it, maybe even a little faster than that. Nowhere near as fast like a picture you'd see on an old television set. Nothing resembling that. A little slower possibly, but it was definitely noticeable by eye.
I'm assuming your watch doesn't have a backlight to it that you're turning on. In other words, if you put it in the dark room, you cannot read it. You can read it in a lit room at nighttime inside your house. And outside, if it's got no backlighting, it wouldn't have to change anything. So hopefully there is no light sensor in that watch where it changes its characteristic as a function of local illumination. All of that seem to make sense, so Joe, go ahead.
It's a fairly cheap watch. It's like the Casio brand. I think the light illumination is manually operated. I don't believe there's anything with any kind of photo system that senses light to dark and lights up the watch. I think it's totally manually operated to actually make the light come on. It looks like a small, I guess what you call a grain of wheat bulb inside the thing, for lack of a better term. I don't know what you'd actually call the light inside there. Some sort of incandescent bulb or miniature or what it actually is, I don't know. I don't use it very much, because that's where the power down. But I'll have to pay attention to it next time I have the thing outside bright sunlight. Hold it at a different angle and actually rotate the watch. And I'll come back next week and let you know what I find. I'm just kind of curious.
Sure is curious, and I'm hearing it for the first time. Okay, I've got the website on that you said, see this one first, and I see the rotating windmill-like thing, and is it the movie there, or the, I see I see quite a number of movies. Yeah, in fact, I did look at some of these. One of these does have the schematic diagram with the two diodes going into a second transformer. Yep, I do remember seeing this movie. And I remember seeing...
No, you don't have to go to the movie. Just go down. All complete literature is on this website. And then you go to first schematic that you have. The first schematic is the first successful device that was investigated by me. And do you see the white page with the schematic? The first one, before we go to the second one.
I see the white schematic. The very first words on that are 10 kilovolts, 2.2 picofarads.
That is correct. That's the one. Let me jump. Pretty simple device. You have a few ones on the primary. You have two primers on the right-hand side. Now, your the waveform that you deliver, it's on the right-hand side, and you see that it has a significant offset. So it's more negative than it's positive.
Yeah, it seems to go 1 volt up and 9 volts down. Is that true?
Yeah, we can assume this way, because we've been trying with 1 volt, we've been trying with 10 volts. Now, on the second primary, you see that the second primary has a capacitor somewhere in the middle, which every yoke does have a capacitor over there. Now, the secondary primary is connected to the secondary, which is a high voltage, in the fashion like other transformer. And then you see one wire, you see two diodes, one is reversed. Then you see the first bar gap, exactly like a Tesla concept. Then you see the capacitor, and then on the right leg of that you see the winding. Now this winding was a bifilar. So again, you had the two winds together, the beginning of one connected to the end of the second, and you had two ends free. You have a variable capacitor to tune the device across, and then you have a very strange structure. That's what it looks like, a core. It's not the core. You have a two rods of the ferrite. That was originally my idea, that are divided in the middle by a piece of paper. So it's they are placed horizontally, one next to the other. There's supposed to be a piece of paper in the middle. Now, when you look at the secondary on the right-hand side of that transformer, sort of transformer, you see that half of the wind is hanging, never connected anywhere. But half of it, which is exactly the same amount of wind, is connected to diode, capacitor, secondary spark gap, and the light bulb. But when you follow the leg that goes from the upper leg of the light bulb, it goes back to the other side of the secondary primary. That's the whole schematic. Now, the signal that was connected to the first primary was a generator, 10 volts. Now, from the other side, from the bottom, when you look at the light bulb, says 220 volts, 60 watts. But we went to 150 watts with it. Although, from the video that you have seen, there was a backlight compensation. So that was a first device that we built, and it was working. Now, the second one is right below that. You see that the windings on that toroid, and you see on the left-hand side that you have two winds, 15 winds and 50 watts winds, and on the right-hand side, you see a bifilar. When you go down with it, you see two white pages with the schematics. So you pass a set of the pictures of it there, and you go to, and then you see the title on it. You can recognize the title, the names. Now, on the second one, you have two diagrams, two schematics. Look at the upper one. On the left-hand side, you have one generator, second generator. Each one is 5 watts, so the only maximum that we could have had is 10 watts out of it if they sum together. On the second, on the right-hand side, you have another half of the toroid that's dividing between with the thin paper on it. Now you see the bifilar on the right-hand side, and then you see bank of capacitors and the light bulb. Now, what it says over there is 220 volts, 150 watts. And do you have later on, I'm going to show you down to the page how that generator looks like. It's a computer-driven generator, Chinese-made, 10 volts out maximum, and if you have this much of the impedance, then the maximum voltage from 50 ohm output of the generator could be 2 volts, 2.5 volts on the coil, which is the 50 winds and 15 winds. Now, there is an additional thing. If you look at the schematic, you see a yellow line with a spark gap on the top of the schematic. You see two arrows for the spark gap, and that's the horizontal wind, which is only U-shaped wind, runs one half of the ferrite. When the spark gap is introduced from a 0.2 amp, 10 volts power supply, then the light bulb that is connected to the output could be as much as 1 kilowatt. Did you follow me so far? And to exchange.
I think I did. And the lamps that are the 220 volt, 150 watt in these schematics are halogen lamp.
Full brightness. It's an incandescent light bulb. It is shown. The guy who was shown is not native American, so some accuracy with that is not really very much explained. And then when you go down, you see the link to to the video, which is explained the 2 hours process of tuning that. Don't go even there. There is even much better right now. And then go down. You see how on the pictures how the spheroid is winded exactly. And then you go down, and then you see the dimensions of the ferrite exactly, and the type of the ferrite. And then very last picture, a little bit dark, it says PC function generator, PC quote something like that, Nelman instrument. Okay, and then when you go down, you see a set of the scope shots showing exactly what's going on over there. Now, the whole secret in here is at a, let me go, 1, 2, 3, 4, at the fifth screenshot, when you have a very fat sine wave on it. Now what you see is very much even amplitude. As I said, the transformers are not even getting hot. That pattern is because we're modulating with approximately 47.85 hertz. So you see all of the data documents standing about, and later on you see how the TV set looks like that was taken from. That's why I'm asking you for your help. And to HGM.
You believe each of the two signal generators that are feeding this are each putting out 5 watts?
Correct. 5 watts, 0.2 amp. 10 volts, and you have a type, you have a model number, you can check them. If there is a need, I can give you the website where you can look at all of the information about it.
When I see the halogen lamps in front of a man's hand, is that the brilliance that you're talking about of 150 watts, Wes, go ahead.
The camera that was used for it is a specially made microscope camera with backlight compensation, and that's what you see is a half of a brightness. But let's assume that we don't have 150 watts with no spark, and we don't have a 1 kilowatt out with spark gun. Let's assume that we have a 50 watt. 60 watts, 100 watts. What difference does it make? And to HGM?
You said that the halogen lamp is an incandescent lamp. Has the voltage across the lamp and the waveform of that voltage across the lamp been measured, Wes?
With low, it goes up to 15 kilovolts. With the no proper tools for it. It's just visual. But then we're going to all of the documents that stands about it, and that's what I'm presenting you right now. It's impossible that you can have a 600 watts with the spark gun from the flyback transformer, or from whatever transformer, 10 volts transformer that is delivered, just to create a voltage that on the other side of the flyback will create a spark of, let's say, 4,000 volts. It is impossible for the light bulb to even start to show something, right or wrong.
Yeah, I think we just had N2NNU join us. Go ahead.
Hello, that we have to have a measurement of the input and output, no matter what he's doing. He has to normalize the voltages and the current into his device to something that he can measure. Without it, we are doubling in the dark. Sorry for that, Dr. Dick. Go ahead. And to anyone in Constanza, you have to step forward and do anything. Go ahead, please.
And I feel that Alex is completely right. We cannot have full empirical data without fulfilling the requirement for everything that he said. Dick?
Yeah, the audio that Alex from Yonkers gave us in the beginning was quite light, and then the heavier audio at the end.
Romania, Dick.
Say that again?
He's in Romania, Constanza.
Yeah, but he's a guy that used to be called Alex from Yonkers. Now he's in Romania, understand? Even though the voltages going to the halogen lamp are very high, Wes, you could use a pair of 10 to 1 or 100 to 1 scope probes so that 1,000 volt spike on the scope probe wouldn't be dangerous to the instrumentation, and it would be a very light loading to the circuit. So measuring the voltage waveform on the halogen lamp would be interesting. The G1 and G2 in this pair of schematic diagrams, I don't think it says the frequency of G1 or G2.
The frequency of G1 and G2 is shown also on the diagrams. The approximate and its very precise instruction over there. The frequency on the scope shaft says 47. Hold on, let me go to that.
I have a question. Are you ready to?
It says 47.85 hertz. That's the modulating frequency. Now, if we're talking about the frequency on 50 winds, I'm going to this 300. Hold on. The AC RMS, the AC dB, the AC plus DC RMS, whatever is there, the duty cycle, the positive wave, negative wave, rise time, the fall time, period, frequency, and phase. Everything is there. On the scope shot.
But the most important thing is not input-output power ratio. And to anything.
Well, the input is precisely described. The pre-input is precisely described in here. On the scopes, scope shots. Now, when you have a time dig, you don't have to go through 2 hours of the video showing all of the process. You can just scan through it. Now you're going to see exactly all of the factors that are related to it in lifetime and to XJS.
Yeah,
one of the schematics shows what I'm going to call functional block diagram. All right. I see triangular shaped objects called channel 1, channel 2, and channel 3. Are those the signal generators, Wes?
Let me go to the schematic, hold on. Okay. Well, on the schematic, I see G1, G2, which are the generator on the left-hand side. On the schematic, white page, but the schematics, two schematics together. Those are two generators. Now, we're dealing with the three frequencies. at the beginning of. Again, instead of G1, we connect a sweeping generator from the network vector analyzer. We try to see what is on the yellow one, which is the horizontal U-shape winding. We try to find a peak. Although I seen that peak on the vector network analyzer, even if I didn't use the spectrum analyzer, because what actually was done there is that the part of the vector network analyzer that is a transmitting part, which is the sweeping generator, was connected to the G1, and then on the output of that horizontal U-shape, we had a spectrum analyzer. And we were looking at 1.2 to 1.9 megahertz, somewhere in this region, that we see a very significant peak always present. And I've seen that on my desk, even though that I have a different yokes, I mean a very much cylindrical one. Then, after we find that, we disconnect. So what I did is I also use only the vector network analyzer, and I've seen that. Now, after that, we disconnect from the G1, from the 50 winds, we disconnect the sweeping generator, and we connect exactly that frequency on the U-shape, so 1.3, let's say. Now, on 50 winds, again, back, we're looking at the highest possible amplitude that we're getting from that scope shot. Now, the U-shape, and we connect back to the 50 winds, exact point, we connect the oscilloscope on the B-pillar of the other half of the ferrite, knowing that we have to deal also with the spacing between two halves. And that is where the dividing paper goes. At that point, we try to tune to the maximum amplitude of even sine wave on the B-pillar, even though that we're giving a ramp signal on the G1, which is 50 winds. After we substitute that, then we go to 15 winds, that is on the same half, left-hand side half, and we're giving 50 hertz on it. After that, we try to trim 50 hertz to 47, or a little bit to this area, and try to find out the biggest response of the light bulb. Then we go to the function generator that is on G1, and we do the same. We do it a few times, and we're done. Also, the capacitance C1 on right-hand side has to be tuned to the maximum light of the light bulb and to a chair.
There are two schematics. Each one has one, two, three, four names on them. Below those two schematics, then there is a block diagram, more complete electronic schematic, enhancing the cascades STK392-010. That one has something called channel 1, channel 2, and channel 3.
The schematic of the generators used.
Okay. Channel 1, channel 2, and channel 3. There are three single generators in that schematic, and each of the two schematics above, I only see two single generators. That's a little bit confusing.
Because this is a proposed one that could be used because Chinese make so many of them. So we propose that this one could be used for this purpose. But what it looks like, there is nothing of nature of 150 watts in it.
Is there a way I can find out what is the channel 1 signal generator, what is channel 2, what is channel 3? What piece of equipment is that signal generator?
You have it on the bottom. When you go to the bottom, past the pictures of the winded yokes, go down, past the pictures of the measurement of the diameters or diameter of the yoke, past that, and then you go down, and then you see the dark picture which says PC-function generator, PCCTU, I believe, 1000, 0.01 megahertz to 2 megahertz, and is made by VELLEMAN Instruments. This is a very, very small box, computer driven.
Are there three of those, West?
I'm not sure if the schematic that is a little bit up is the schematic of this one with the twin channels on it. I'm not sure about it. I gotta ask Arunas if that was about. This is the model number of the generator. Now, if you look at the videos, you're gonna see those generators presented somewhere at the end. So all data possible is there, even though there is a picture later on down the bottom with the particular TV set of and the manufacturer number and everything that you could possibly have to identify that object.
Question, Dick.
Go ahead, John.
Dick, you know, we really can't pay any attention to what's coming out of this thing's output. With that bulb and that impedance, there is no way he could have 1,000 volts on a 250-watt bulb. There's no reason that voltage can't be measured with a digital voltmeter.
Point. I'd much rather see it measured on an oscilloscope, calibrated 10-to-1 or 100-to-1 probes on an oscilloscope, because I suspect it's a very nonlinear waveform. When you put a nonlinear waveform into a digital voltmeter, you can get very crazy results, particularly...
Dick, he said he has a perfect sine wave coming out of it.
How do you know that if you don't see the output waveform that's on the light bulb with an oscilloscope? How do you know what the waveform is?
N2NNU.
That's very easy because before you put the load on it, you had seen the waveform that was there. It was pure sine wave. That's what you see on the scope shots, and that's what I explained to you when we tuned the device.
Yeah, I think I think N2NNU just signed in. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Dick. I think it's better. Now, I did not realize that I was speaking to the microphone on the floor.
Hi.
I suggested to Wesley to normalize the output to some other power that we can measure. If you started with a light, that's fine. So a simple instrument like a dark room with a photosensor that can be calibrated against one of the 17 volts at output at the outlet with an auto transformer that it can vary, then that will tell you how much power you get into the photolight, how many photons. So I think that will be enough if you can do that. And a simple clamp-on meter on the main input to the system. Let's not forget that his generators are consuming power too. So that's simple. I don't know why it's not done yet. You understand what I'm saying, Dick? M2NNU?
Well, M2NNU. It's a technical difficulty with it. The experiment is being done from the computer-driven generators that are operated from two different countries. The device is a third country. And there are five people, six of them. I think John and Alex and Dick, what I'm asking you, would somehow be possible that somehow a weird effect, just a weird, completely weird effect that is not related to any anomaly of the power in and power out, but simply causing a 150-watt light bulb being in full brightness from these two generators. Would that possibly be possible with incandescent light bulb?
If it's possible and if it's lit, we can measure it. I'm not doubting it. I'm just saying we should.
Is there a way that we can find the data sheet on G1 and G2, Wes?
Well, the type is there. Only to put it into the internet, I'm gonna, again, did you find this picture with the, to the bottom, go to the bottom, like, before the scope shot, before the scope shot. And you see the dark picture, but it says PC function generator. PCGU1000, I believe it is.
Wait for the beep, guys.
Yes, I did find that picture, and still I'd like to see a data sheet. I'm a little confused by the two cascaded schematics with the four names on them. Both show G1 and G2. Then the schematic below it shows one channel, two channel, three channel. The third schematic, so to speak, has three signal generators. The two above it seem to have two signal generators. That's a little confusing. And I don't see, I'd like to see a data sheet on those signal generators.
So what we can do is, since some of the listeners could be a little bit tired with the subject, change the subject, and I'm going to try to punch it into Google and try to find the data sheet, although it shouldn't be difficult. PCG. Is that what you see, Dick? PCG 1000?
Yes, I did see that. But still, that's a foreign brand to me. I don't know anything about it yet, and I'd like to see a data sheet on it. John, I think you said you had another question on refrigeration, KC2WGB, K2RIW. Oh, maybe...
That was Paul, Dick.
Sorry about that, Paul. WS2N, go right ahead. Are you still with us, Paul? Maybe Paul had to leave. Okay, is there anyone else with a question that we've skipped over up till now? The little bit of the problem we've got here, Wes, is that multiple people involved, multiple countries. I'm getting the impression that not all the hardware is in one place at one time. So putting it all together is a little bit difficult. And you believe there's 5 watts coming out of each signal generator. But until that's measured with voltage, current, and comparison of those current and voltage waveforms. I mean, just making a measurement with a clamp-on ammeter may not be enough if there's nonlinear phenomena going on. I know that a number of the articles that I've seen on magnetic rotary machines are a little bit confusing because the metering being used was averaging meeting, not true RMS metering. And when you've got a very nonlinear waveform, and you make a measurement on an average meter as opposed to a true RMS meter, that can give very different results. And a true RMS meter, even if you've got one of those, you've got to worry about whether or not the frequency response is proper. I could have a true RMS meter that does a beautiful job up to 1 kilohertz, but it may not be true RMS anymore if I made a measurement at 100 kilohertz. So all instrumentation has got limitations. The thing that I have the most amount of faith in is voltage waveforms and current waveforms measured on a very good oscilloscope. Now you stand a chance of integrating the area under the curve and figuring out how many true RMS watts there could be there. KQRIW.
I found that generator. I'm gonna send you the link for it.
Is it written in English? Will I be able to understand it?
Definitely.
What is the country of origin of that signal generator?
It's gonna take me 30 seconds to send it to you, generator. Okay, and I'm gonna send it to you. Hold on.
You know, Dick, one other thing Wesley alludes to is the fact that those two generators, being their computer-operated generator, there's no way they can put out 1,000 watts. So even if he's putting in 100 watts out of those generators, there's still something going on. That's how he's looking at it.
Oh, I accept the fact that it sure looks unusual and it's worthy of further investigation.
Check your email. Exactly the type. There's exactly the type with the model number, exactly the one that is utilized here. What it says. Did you open up?
Yes, I did. 2 megahertz USB PC function generator.
Okay. And now that's what you see.
On top it says 0 to 1 megahertz, function generator 0 to 1 megahertz, and then below that the next thing it says is 2 megahertz USB PC function generator.
Because what they do is they make the same model with two different frequency ranges. One mostly is being sold as a board only. I've seen the link before, but this one is 2. So frequency up to 2 megahertz. And it says crystal-based stability outputs, TTL level. It's basically everything that we need. 10 volts peak-to-peak. 600 ohm load, 0 volt offset, and whatsoever. Maybe you can comment on it.
Yeah. 10 volts peak-to-peak, 600 ohm load is nowhere near 5 watts.
Well, what it was showing is 0.2 amp and 10 volts out. We measured that. It means we put the voltmeter across, high voltage, high frequency voltmeter across, and we measured the current. So that's what we've got.
When it says 10 volts peak to peak, is that a sine wave or a square wave or a triangle wave? What kind of a waveform is the 10 volts peak to peak?
What I believe what's happened over there is Chinese put this on the spec sheet, but the generator could be made the way that is giving a little bit more. That was measured with the sine wave. To make sure that we're not having any problems with measurement.
These are about 4 volts RMS, no?
If it was 10 volt square wave, 10 volts peak to peak, which would really be 5 volts peak, and if I do E squared over R, assuming it's a square wave, I get 41 milliwatts. So the power of the signal generator, if it was a 600 ohm load. So maybe it's got an emitter follower or something like that on the output where it's a constant voltage generator and it can dish out a whole lot of current. But if it's designed for a 600 ohm load, this is a milliwatt signal generator. I wonder if you see it differently than that, John. Go ahead.
No, I don't, Dick. And also, remember, he's attaching that same generator at 2.5 amperes
through that small copper strip, which is about maybe 8 inches long, that's folded in a U. So that impedance is way down.
A little bit of explanation. The generator was, yes, it was connected just for the purpose to find the maximum response on the 50 winds. So again, 51 was first used to sweep, and then the spectrum analyzer was connected to the copper strip U-shape wind. After the frequency of 1.3 megahertz was established, then this generator was connected to that strip, and then the 51 was measured with the maximum frequency response peak. That established 382 whatever kilohertz. After that, the generator was again connected to 382 kilohertz, and then on the BFLR, we've been looking at the maximum response of the maximum amplitude. And then after that was done and retuned, then 50 hertz was introduced on 15 watts. Back to you.
Dick, I don't think he could have one volt on that copper strip pulling that attenuator down like that. What do you think?
I'm beginning to wonder if the single generator is firing a high-power transistor network. Second of all, when I look at the third schematic, the one that says STK392-010, enhancing the cascades, there you see triangular-shaped objects called channel 1, channel 2, channel 3, and by the pin numbers that are there, it looks like those are integrated circuits of some kind. And that doesn't look like the same single generator that we're reading the data sheet from. So there seems to be a fair amount of disconnect between the single generator that's supposedly being used and the schematic.
That is an explanation. The information were assembled by the guy who was just assisting, but the guy is now nowhere knowledgeable. So all of the data that he was trying to find about the generator, whatever is there, the schematic, I assume, is not the real schematic of that generator, but on the particular experiment, when you look at the video, you see exactly that schematic. I mean, that device being used and being utilized. And even though that you look at the schematic that is there, should we assume that this device that you see with three channels could handle a 1,000 watts?
When there was 1,000 watts coming out, was that going into a different kind of halogen lamp, 1,000-watt halogen lamp?
But the experiment was made with 600 watts for 20 minutes with a small flyback that was connected to the spark up to the copper strip. That was the additional amplification factor without that 150 watts.
If the halogen lamp is a 220-volt, 150-watt halogen lamp, were four of those running in series or in parallel to make the 600-watt display?
Suggestion, Dick.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
To keep it sane, let's just deal with the 150-watt, because don't forget, they're adding another transformer, a flyback, another spark gap on top, firing that copper strip coil. Let's just work with 150 watts with 10 watts in, because that's where the whole key lies. So I don't think it matters if he was running a million watts.
Correct.
I'm going to accept that. But if generator number one and generator number two are the thing that we've just seen the schematic diagram, the data sheet on, and that produces milliwatts, are we saying milliwatts of input without a driver transistor gave 150 watts of output? Also, the schematic diagram shows a VCC plus and a VCC minus. That's the third schematic. The upper schematics don't show that. There's a number of disconnects here, Wes.
But Dick, that should be marked as a non sequitur. That diagram has nothing to do with the experiments. It shouldn't even be in the Victoria.
Any idea why it's there, Jones?
Wesley stated before, that was the initial thought to show a representation of the generator, not the actual one that they're using. So we have contaminated data here, and they gotta resolve this problem.
Yeah, the data sheet on the signal generators are milliwatt type signal generators. Maybe I'll give you 100 milliwatts. So if we're saying a pair of 100 milliwatt signal generators go into this very complicated transformer with spark gaps, and out comes a significant amount of brilliance on a 150 watt halogen lamp.
That's without a spark gap.
Without its spark gap.
Schematic number one and schematic number two, the white background showing the transformer in generator one and generator two, each one of those has a spark gap in it.
Yes, but this curve spark gap is not utilized for 150 watts. It is only utilized from 600 to 1 kilowatt.
So the yellow wires going to the spark gap, although they're shown in the schematic with the 150 watt light bulb, halogen light bulb, you're saying that is not the way it was hooked up?
They were not connected. That loop is there, that copper strip is there, but there's nothing hooked up to it. It's just sitting there open.
That's correct. What is happening actually is that if we top it with the spark up, then we're getting a lot of more response that we have just with if we don't do it. Now, additional factor that was discovered was that if we don't even connect that wire anywhere, but we connect a small capacitor, variable capacitor, across, and we have a somehow of closed parallel circuit. By tuning that capacitor, we can tune actually the matching impedance between the generators and the output coil. That's what I asked you last week. Let me jump.
Let me ask you though. Were the generator one and generator two, where you just gave me the data sheet for it, were those signal generators firing a power transistor setup, or were those signal generators, milliwatt signal generators, going directly to that coil?
To the coil, sir.
If they're going directly to the coil, how can a claim of 5 watts input from each signal generator be made when the data sheet implies that they're only good for milliwatts?
You.
Answered something?
I said thank you. I'd like to know the answer too.
The current that is shown on the meter, on the video, so 0.2, then is so 0.19 of an amp. The voltage shows 10 volts. You can calculate by yourself.
If the manufacturer says that this is the performance it gives into a 600 ohm load, and he doesn't tell me any data for any other load. I've used a number of 600 ohm signal generators made by Hewlett Packard to do audio testing. And I can tell you that when they tell you that it's going to give this performance into a 600 ohm load, its source impedance is probably close to 600 ohms. So you can't get anything more than milliwatts out of a machine like that if the data sheet is telling you the truth. I know you wanted to say something, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
KC2WGB. Yes, I have another question along those lines. Wesley, the meters he was reading, were they on the computer screen relative to the PC USB product, or was or those external machines that he was reading?
You can clearly see him with your own eyes. External machine that was connected to the generator. External machine. My understanding is that we're dealing with a Chinese product. Maybe I'm right or I'm wrong, I don't know. Maybe because Chinese are being blamed of not really the highest quality product. They decided to put on the data sheet that's what they should be there, but it is definitely not the Hewlett Packard. And they deliver just a little bit more, definitely 1.9 and 1.9 or is 0. Point, I mean 0.2 of an amp or 0.19 of an amp. That was the fluctuation on the meter.
Well, Wesley, what they should do, take the generator, put a 600 ohm load across it, and make some measurements. That's what I would do.
That's what I'm going to suggest to be done. But apart from that, despite that fact, it sounds very strange. That's why I ask you again, and you didn't respond to this question, Dick. Is it possible that some weird frequency mix could make 150 watts halogen at least give a little light, I'm not talking that much light, out of two generators that are not necessarily adding the frequency, themselves to 10 watts, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't know whether or not a halogen has that kind of a peculiar characteristic that you're describing, that you're going to get more light for the same amount of power input because you've given it a funny frequency or a funny waveform.
Well, you have also 60 watts shown on the previous video, the first one, 60 watts shown at first and then advanced to 150 watts. And that one is regular incandescent light bulb.
Yeah, you said, John suggested, and you said you're going to have them do this, and that is put a 600 ohm load on the single generator and see the way it behaves. What I would recommend is that you put a 600 ohm load on the single generator, only a 600 ohm load, turn it down below maximum power output, somewhere in its linear region. Maybe that's 9 volts peak-to-peak output. Then put a second 600 ohm load across the signal generator so that it sees a total of 300 ohms. The change in voltage without changing any of the controls on the signal generator, when you change the impedance, will tell you what is the Thevenin impedance of that signal generator. Now, if when they go from 600 ohms to 300 ohms and the voltage doesn't move one small amount, and then you go to 100 ohms, and then you go to 50 ohms, and so on. Yeah, maybe there's something peculiar about that signal generator where it's got a great big moose of a final stage amplifier in it, which can drive amperes of output. But that would be a very unusual design. If you design a signal generator made for 600 ohms, which is a standard audio impedance for intercom circuits, aircraft intercoms in particular.
Dick, don't forget, it's powered by a USB port.
That's correct.
Wow. Okay. If it's powered by a USB port, how in the world can anybody claim they're getting 5 watts output? What do you think, John?
Well, let me look at that. I'm not very sure. I'm looking at a picture right now of that device. It has 3 ports. Just a moment. Dick, did you look at the picture of that? It does have a 3 output BNC, 3 BNC connectors. Is that schematic exactly that for this device? Okay.